One of the TV shows that we've started to watch is called Heartland. And so Heartland is it's a Canadian show, and it's based out west. And Heartland is the name of a ranch. And, you know, it follows this family, and Jack is the grandfather. He's like the patriarch of the family, and his granddaughters are Lou and Amy, right? And Lou kind of runs the business side of the ranch, and Amy deals with the horses because it's a horse ranch. And so she's sometimes called the horse whisperer. And so she can heal horses and kind of help them deal with whatever trauma they are so they can kind of get back to their usual selves and everything. But in this one episode, they are worried that their house and their barn and their horses and everything is in jeopardy because there's been a rash of local burglaries. And so they go out and they buy this kind of state-of-the-art protection security system with cameras and motion sensors and the whole thing, and it's all kind of wired into Jack's phone. You can turn it off and turn it on because it's connected to this app. And so they go out this one night, and there's this charity event in town, and so they go out and do that, and they can do that, you know, feeling peace of mind and calm because they know that they've got this state-of-the-art security system. But they get home, and they're really upset, and they go in there, and Jack realizes first that they've been burgled. So, like, they go in the house, and of course, yeah, it's just like a total mess in there. So, like, all their stuff is gone, all their valuable stuff is gone, and, like, not only that, and people who've had, you know, their house broken into, no, it's a very violating experience because not only is it about stuff, but that's where you live, that's where you sleep, that's where you have meals and all the stuff and memories. And so someone has gone in there with malicious intent, taken stuff, but not only that, but the place has been ransacked. So like lamps are broken, couches are turned upside down, the whole thing. And they feel horrible, but they also wonder, how could this possibly have happened? Because we have this state-of-the-art security system. And they realize what's happened. Jack, on his phone on the app, he thought he was turning on, but he actually disabled. He turned off the security system, right? And so they're so upset by this. And an unguarded home is an enemy's playground. You know, imagine if you have an enemy and your home is unguarded. You can go in and do all this stuff and ransack everything. Well, what I'd like to do is I'd like to substitute the word home for heart. An unguarded heart is the enemy's playground. But a guarded heart is God's. And the reason I start like this is because, as I've been saying, we're standing, you know, gazing out on the horizon of another 12 months in a year in which uncertainty seems like the only certainty. But of course, that might seem to be the case, but it's not the case because God is certain. God is the same yesterday, today, and forever. So we need to tether ourselves to Him. And one of the ways we do that is to guard our hearts in Him. Guard our hearts in God. The way to keep yourselves from being knocked off center is to be properly centered. And we need to do that by guarding our hearts. Think of all the uncertainty in the year that's going to come out. Okay, so we don't really know what's going to hold. Maybe this stuff's going to end. Maybe it's not. It's going to change. We don't really know. In the midst of the uncertainty, who are you going to be in the midst of your most significant relationships? In the midst of this uncertainty, who are you going to be so that you can have a balanced or a positive state of mind? In the midst of this uncertainty, how is Jesus going to use you for his good purposes? Okay? We need to guard our hearts to ensure that we can be at our best to face whatever faces us in the coming year. So to do that, we're going to open the Bible to Proverbs 4 and explain a few things about the book of Proverbs. Now, Proverbs is one of those ones, it's right after the Psalms. And Proverbs are really short sayings. They're short sayings that convey big truths. And they're very compact. They're short. A communicator named Andy Stanley says that memorable is portable. Memorable is portable, meaning that you carry it with you. So this was especially important in the ancient world because a lot of people couldn't read, certainly not to the degree to which people can read now. So memorable is portable. So if you know something, if it's short enough to memorize, you can carry it around with you, metaphorically speaking, and you can summon that wisdom to apply to your life whenever you happen to need it, right? And even in our society at large, there's just general proverbs like, you know, like father, like son, or you know, an apple a day keeps the doctor away, right? These are little truths. Okay, if we eat well, you know, we're less likely to have health issues. So these are little proverbs out there in the wider world. But in the Bible, what are these proverbs focused on? Well, they're all about revering the God of wisdom and then living wisely. So don't live in foolishness, but revere the God of wisdom, learn from him, and then live wisely as a result. So that's really the kind of the high-level focus of the Proverbs. So we're in chapter 4, and we're going to begin at verse 20. I'm reading from the New International Version. It starts like this. My son, pay attention to what I say. Turn your ear to my words. So my son, who's talking? Well, this is King Solomon. Who is talking. Now, King Solomon didn't write all of the Proverbs, but he wrote many of them, and we're told that in chapter 1. And so he's writing to his son, but not only is that wisdom for his son, but also, by extension, to the rest of us. So all of God's children, my son, pay attention to what I say. Turn your ear to my words. Literally, incline your ear to me. So imagine being in a noisy room, a dizzying room, and it's so loud and it's hard to make out. You really got to lean into someone to hear what they're about to say. That's what Solomon's speaking to his son and through his son to all of us. Do not let them, my words, out of your sight. Keep them within your heart. Now, that's about having God's words internalized within us. Keep them inside of you, within you, right? Digest food, sure, but digest God's words all the more. Why? Verse 22, for they are life to those who find them and health to one's whole body. In other words, God's teaching has an impact, actually, in who you are and how you live. These words, godly words, are medicinal. Why? Because they come from the great physician himself. And then verse 23, which is the key verse in these 8 verses we're looking at today. Above all else, and that's kind of the key to us that we're supposed to pay particular attention. Above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it. Guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it. So let's pause on that for a second, since this is the theme verse. So what is being spoken about? Well, heart, guard your heart. Well, you just have to name the fact that heart is being spoken of metaphorically, right? So he's not talking about a muscle which pumps blood. He's talking about something more. Now, when we talk about a heart today, we talk about someone speaking our heart language or tugging at heartstrings. So quite often we use heart as a metaphor for our emotions or our feelings, and sometimes in a romantic sense, right? There's a little heart symbol that means kind of romance or love. And although those things aren't excluded from the biblical idea, it is more comprehensive. It is also, you know, in the mind of the biblical writers, it's also the place of thinking. It's the place of priorities. It's your inner self. So above all else, guard your heart, guard your inner self, guard who you truly are, your thinking, your emotions, that place where you set your foundational priorities. So guard your heart. So not only does that help us to know what is being talked about when it says heart, but also what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to guard our hearts. I remember seeing this, the pilot movie for Little House on the Prairie. And this is before they get to Plum Creek and Walnut Grove and the whole thing. So this is like on the journey there. So they had primarily initially settled in this other location, and they built this little cabin. And it was like one room, very simple, log cabin. But it was so early in the construction that the walls were there, but there was no windows and no door. And so there's just a blanket hanging over the door where the door would soon be hung. And in the middle of the night, the middle girl, Laura, gets up and notices her pa, Charles, is not there. And so she comes outside, and he's like, shh. And he's kneeling right in front of the door, where the door is supposed to be, kneeling there quietly with his gun. He's like, shh. He's guarding the cabin. Now, why? Because there's a pack of wolves circling the cabin like this. Right? And if he wasn't doing that, these wolves could just come right in to the front door of his cabin and devour everything that is most precious to him. And I think that's a helpful illustration to us, because we need to have a similar posture when it comes to our hearts. And if we aren't guarding them, something can come in and devour all that is most precious to us. And then it also says why we are to do this. Well, for everything you do flows from it. Everything you do flows from your inner self, who you are, that place of thinking and emotion and priorities, right? And so just like a stream or a brook or a river kind of traces back in many cases to some sort of spring, so do our actions and the things that we do trace back to what's going on the very inside of us, in our hearts. A couple years ago, I was giving a sermon on a similar topic, and I did a little object lesson, and I had a cup of water half full here, and I invited Jen to come over, and I said, just kind of give me a little nudge, kind of push me a little bit. And she goes, like, what is going on? You remember this? Yeah. And anyway, she just nudged me a little bit. And so the water didn't spill. I said, okay, now really kind of shove me like you're upset or something. And she's like, are you sure? Anyway, yeah. So she really shoved me. And of course, the water spilled all over myself and all over the stage, right? And that was an illustration of the fact that the stuff that is in us when we are under pressure or we feel like we're going through a bump in the road in life or something, just, gosh, it spills out of us. What happens to be in there? And that just speaks to us the importance of making sure we guard our heart to make sure that we are being very deliberate and intentional about what's going on, our thoughts, our attitudes as we set priorities, because sooner or later, it's going to come gushing out. And so verse 23, I've said, is kind of like the central theme verse. And now the next couple of verses, which brings us to the end of the text for today, these are indications to us or suggestions to us about how to guard our heart, okay? Verse 24, keep your mouth free of perversity. Keep corrupt talk far from your lips. Okay, so this is about how we speak. And how we speak actually is one of the ways to guard our hearts, right? The playground taunt is a lie. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never hurt me. It's a lie. We all know it's a lie. Of course, it's not true, right? James 3:18, you know, Jesus' half-brother James gives us a really stern warning that the tongue can be full of deadly poison, right? And we all know that to be true. Maybe, hopefully not, but maybe you've said something which has been like deadly poison to someone. Maybe someone else has said that to you. So we know it's true. Words have power. We are to protect our words and our mouths and make sure that we spew blessing and not poison. And so our words, one of the ways to guard our hearts is that our words need to be honoring God, showing our love for God and our love for neighbor. Next, verse 25, let your eyes look straight ahead. Here's the second body part of this name. Let your eyes look straight ahead. Fix your gaze directly before you. And so this is about what we pay attention to, what we focus on, the things that we fill our priorities with. What am I paying attention to? And that's important because what you pay attention to shapes you. And we know this, we're sponges. It's like what we pay attention to, what we focus on as we go about our days has like a boomerang effect and goes back and kind of shapes who we are and what our character and behavior is like. For example, we're so pliable as people quite often. You know, if you watch a TV show that celebrates envy and promotes envy, guess what? You're going to be less and less content. You're going, why don't I have that? I want more stuff. If you listen to a vlogger or a radio or someone and their language is really terrible, I'm guessing that your own language is going to take a bit of a downgrade, right? We are pliable as people. And so therefore, we should be focusing on good and godly things. And I'm reminded of Hebrews 12:2 that we talked about in the last series. Fix your eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. And fixing our eyes on him means that we are unfixing our eyes from other things. And so there's things that we pay attention to should reflect the love that we have for God and the love that we have for other people, right? Okay, verse 26, give careful thought to the paths for your feet. There's the third body part that's mentioned. Give careful thought to the paths for your feet and be steadfast in all your ways. Do not turn to the right or the left. Keep your foot from evil. Okay, so I think, you know, I can't help but share Jesus' own words here in the Sermon on the Mount. Matthew 7, Jesus says, enter through the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the road that leads to destruction, and many enter through it. But small is the gate and narrow is the road that leads to life, and only a few find it. And so this metaphor about feet is all about our paths and how you are walking, and you want to be walking on the straight path, level path, as you head through and you journey through life trying to get to the end. So that's going to be easier to do if you're on the straight and narrow path and you're not like getting focused and to the left or to the right, which are metaphors for like the moral ditch. And we want on that even ground. And think of on this being on this level ground, living rightly. And this language about on the path is about, you know, being living in a way that is right before God and others. And let's say it's not just about for your own benefit, so you don't stumble and fall, but maybe you're caring for somebody. Maybe you've got a young person in your backpack. Maybe you're pushing, you know, someone you care about who's elderly and they're in a wheelchair. Well, it's one thing to do that on a level path. It's another thing to try to do that on a rocky path and there's roots and you're kind of trying to navigate around like the top of a cliff or whatever. We value the level and straight path. So this language about the paths for your feet is all about your daily habits. How are you living your life? Are you living focused and faithful, or are you getting distracted on the wrong things? So we're going to end the text there. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
All right, so our key verse is verse 23. Above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it. That is what we are supposed to do. I love the NET translation at this place. It says, guard your heart with all vigilance. And as we've gone through the text, you'll notice that there's three words to help us do that. You know, your mouth, your eyes, and your feet. And so what I'd like to do is I'm going to put those three ideas up there. So your mouth, your tongue, your eyes, and your feet. And I just want to pose three questions as we think about how we might guard our hearts, okay? And so the first question is, what needs to keep happening? So as you think about the next 12 months, you think about your daily habits in your life, what needs to keep happening in terms of your speech? What ways are you honoring God with your language or when you interact with other people? Well, that's good. This is a confirmation. Maybe there's certain things that you are currently doing that need to keep happening, and that's good. What about your eyes, those things that you focus on and pay attention to? Is there habits that you have which are good and godly and help you focus on Him and that are a blessing to other people? Well, keep doing that. Those things need to keep happening. What about your feet? And that's a metaphor for how you're walking, your daily habits. Are you living focused and faithful? And maybe there's things that you're doing right now, whether it's worship, maybe it's blessing someone, maybe it's some way that you're serving someone else or a group of people in your community. Maybe it's a devotional practice. Maybe there's some things that need to keep happening, and that's great. So this is an affirmation of that. That's good. But also, as we stand and gaze out on the next 12 months, the next question is, what needs to stop happening? See, people are kind of more open to change in their lives, I think, at the start of a new year. Why? I don't know. October 1st isn't like different than January 1st, but for some reason, the change of a calendar, the change of a year, you know, Happy New Year, yada, yada, yada. We all seem to be kind of more open to change. And so maybe this is the moment to realize, you know what? There's either been a way that I've been talking, or there has been something I've been paying attention to, or there's been a habit that has crept into my life that needs to stop happening. Because you know what? I'm not guarding my heart. I'm opening the floodgates, and the enemy is just going to wreak havoc on me. Third question, what needs to start happening? And so maybe there's something that you're like, you know what? I need to have a new practice or a new way that I use my language with the people around me in my relationships or at work or my family, whoever. Or maybe I need to start paying attention to something that I wasn't paying attention to before. Or maybe this is a time that a godly habit needs to kind of be integrated into your life, and now is the time. And you're listening to this, and you're like, I've been thinking about such and such, but now Matthew's saying this in Proverbs 4, et cetera, et cetera. Now is the time. Okay? I also want to talk about part of your motivation for doing this. It's also found in verse 23. It says, for everything you do flows from it, meaning from your heart. Everything you do flows from your heart. So there's a connection between your success or failure at guarding your heart and everything you do. This should motivate us. How are you at guarding your heart? Well, there's a connection between that and everything you do. So, I want to ask us a couple other things. In a year of uncertainty, what kind of a person are you going to be in your most significant relationships? Because none of us know what the year's going to hold. Right? There's going to be some ups, some downs. Let's hope there's more ups than downs. You never really know, right? But regardless of what we experience, you are going to be dealing with those things with people in your most significant relationships. So who are you going to be in your most significant relationships? And we need to think about this because when we are tired and weary and frustrated with the world as we are right now, we don't tend to naturally be at our best. And so guarding your heart, being vigilant about guarding your heart consistently and proactively, protecting it and shaping it in your attitudes and in your priorities is going to better position you to be at your best in your most significant relationships. Next one, what is your state of mind going to be like in this year of uncertainty? State of mind is so big, it's so important. I want you to be in a good state of mind. I want to be in a good state of mind. I want my enemies to be in a good state of mind. A good state of mind matters. We want this for whatever we're going to be dealing with. And so what I'm saying is that when you are vigilant at consistently and proactively protecting and shaping your attitudes and priorities, you are better positioned to have a good state of mind. The next one, how is Jesus going to use you for his good purposes? See, when you read through the Bible, things aren't peaceful and wonderful all the time. You read through trial, hardship, persecution, war, like all these things. This is life. It's difficult. And there's never a passage which says, okay, you're going through something tough, pause, forget about God, pause, you don't have to love your neighbor, pause, forget about prayer, forget about blessing people, forget about being the hands and feet of Jesus. That pause button doesn't exist. And so in this year, whatever it's going to hold, Jesus is still going to be summoning us to serve his good purposes. And what I'm saying in this is that if you are proactively and consistently protecting and shaping your attitudes and priorities, you are going to be better positioned to be more open to what God's going to do through you in the coming 12 months. Guard your heart with all vigilance. An unguarded heart is the enemy's playground, but a guarded heart is God's. So I started off by saying that thing about Heartland, and they had, you know, the house was unguarded, ransacked. Let me give you a bit of a contrast story. November 2013, a man went into a bank in South London. This is London, England. And like to rob the bank, like mask, like the outfit, the gun at the teller, give me all your money. Like that's how it happens apparently. And really scary situation that, you know, but, you know, on the afterwards, you can see, because this is on YouTube, you can see the security camera for the bank there. And beside, there's this guy at the next teller over, James Rowley. And he's standing there, and he's watching this all go down, and he notices, and he's like, wait a second, that's a plastic gun. It's not a real gun. And so he waits for the, you know, the person to have some money and runs out of the bank. And you can see this on the film too, at least until he gets outside. He like rips off down the stairs. He slams over there, looks around what direction this guy, he runs down, tackles the guy, pins him down, calls out. Someone calls the police. They come and arrest the guy. There you go. James Rowley, he was given a financial reward, obviously, and a commendation from the police as well. And I mean, that bank was guarded in ways that I didn't even realize. And the reason I say that is not only because it is an example of vigilant guardianship, but because what is in your heart is more valuable than anything in the world's biggest bank. Guard your heart with all vigilance. An unguarded heart, my friends, is an enemy's playground, but a guarded heart is God's. Amen.